The say not the way is the way that we use to winnow down something that's nebulous, huge in psychology and sociology, to make it a usable chunk. So when a person's walking along, they can look at somebody and use it as a mental checklist, size them up. So we walk into a room and there's a person being louder than anybody else, right? And we're not sure if they're loud because they're the speaker, loud because they're the comedian in the bar, or loud because they're happy or unhappy with somebody. Hey, everybody, we're going to sing happy birthday. So right away in that moment, I have to take a knee mentally and take a look at this and say, okay, is this person wanting their say, or are they wanting their way? And a person that's wanting their way, okay, I can.
Welcome to the Left of Greg podcast. Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Left of Greg podcast. I'm Brian Marin, the host and creator of the show. As always, I will be joined by human behavior expert Mr. Greg Williams, who the show is affectionately named after. Here on the Left of Greg show, our goal is to increase your advanced critical thinking ability through a better understanding of what we call human behavior, pattern recognition, and analysis. If you'd like to find out more about what that is, you can check the episode details. If you have any questions or would like us to cover a specific topic, please reach out to us at leftofgreg@gmail.com. Today, we are responding to some of the questions we received regarding our statement that most people want their say, not their way. During the episode, we explain what we mean by this statement, why it is significant, and we give a number of examples of how to identify the difference between these types of people. We also talk about the difference between someone who is acting up versus acting out, and why it is an important distinction. Please don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find the links in the episode details. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with your friends. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed the show. All right, Greg, we'll go ahead and get started. If you have to get up to defend yourself against the bear you have roaming around there, just feel free to do that.
It's daylight, so I'm relatively safe.
Okay.
Brian.
Okay.
About 0240 hours is when the bear is the most active, which is generally a good sleeping time for your REM. Bears don't REM. They hibernate.
So. I just picture, you know, was it John Candy, Great Outdoors, you know, that
hilarious
kind of situation.
Hilarious reference.
Right now.
What's going on? Well, Shell's about had it. So what I'm afraid is Shell's going to go out and fist fight the bear.
Yeah, I could see Shelly doing that.
She would do that. Exactly. That's funny.
So today's topic du jour, things we want to jump into. We get some questions about this, actually some great questions. But, you know, one of the things that we say, kind of one of our sort of guiding principles, again, we talked about it in other podcast episodes, just not specifically on this for an entire episode. But I want to jump into, you know, we like to teach that most people, you know, people want their say, not their way.
Sure.
And it's kind of a interesting, you know, it's a way to kind of boil down some very complex human interactions, both psychologically and sociologically between humans, to that simple statement of most people want their say, not their way. And then what we'll get to eventually too is we tack on top of that. So kind of like a use of that is then, is this person acting up or are they acting out? Because those are kind of two different things and they tie together, and we'll get into that. But
That's great.
Do you want to start with giving what you mean by people want their say, not their way? And then I'll kind of add to that too, because I've got some other things too to add about it. But if you want to start with that, and then we'll go back and forth on that, I think.
So there's 100 textbook definitions about different psychological stances, everything else. And there's a whole bunch of platitudes that are out there meaningless. So in class, I wouldn't say, you know, point to a student and go, remember, twinkle, twinkle, little star. Because at the end of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, there's not a story where we all sit down and go, my God, that's the most profound way of living my life. And we remember, some people get it in books. Some people hear it from others on LinkedIn about stoicism, and they all go off. John Boyd, what would John do?
John Boyd do?
Exactly. So the say not the way is the way that we use to winnow down something that's nebulous, huge in psychology and sociology, to make it a usable chunk. So when a person's walking along, they can look at somebody and use it as a mental checklist, size them up. So we walk into a room and there's a person being louder than anybody else, right? And we're not sure if they're loud because they're the speaker, loud because they're the comedian in the bar, or loud because they're happy or unhappy with somebody. Hey, everybody, we're going to sing happy birthday. So right away in that moment, I have to take a knee mentally and take a look at this and say, okay, is this person wanting their say, or are they wanting their way? And a person that's wanting their way, okay, I can placate them. Hey, listen, my food is cold. You know what? You're right. Let me warm that up for you or get you a new one. A person that wants her say, well, I need to tell you, I waited too long in line. I paid too much for my meal and I'm not happy with it. Well, I'm sorry about that, sir. I can fix that too. Danger, collision course, when a person wants her say and their way. And that's the person that gets up and goes, I've had enough. Flips the table in front of you and now goes, you know, on acting out all of the different, like it's like a pantomime of their complaint. Yeah. And so what happens that we're lucky about is that when people want their say, I know that I can take an off ramp and fix that.
Okay.
When people want their way, I know I can take an off ramp and fix that. But Brian, when those two collude, I'm going to have a mess on my hands.
Yeah.
Act first and act fast.
So that's, and I kind of want to not reel it back, but to stop right there for a minute, because yeah. I want to further sort of define, you know, a little bit behind why people want to have their say. And I always give the social media example is a great one, right?
Sure.
What happens? People get in arguments on there. People comment on there. Like everyone gets to have their say on there, whether you know anything about the topic being discussed or not, right? You get
Does
to have
not matter anymore.
Doesn't matter, right? You get to have that. And so that's sort of a psychological and sociological imperative, right? I have to feel heard. And I don't necessarily need to get my way, but I need you to know that this is how I feel.
I have an opinion.
Well, yes, it's like, and this is why like politics is so powerful and prevalent, because everyone gets to have an opinion because we're all in this. Like I get a vote, you get a vote, Greg, your vote doesn't matter more than mine. Maybe you have more knowledge on that topic and your opinion might be more,
this is but one place in,
but you
in
and
world,
I
we're equal.
Yeah, we're equal. So then we all get to have our say in it, which is we're part of the society, right? So I use that as an example of how everyone talks about it all the time. And you get to, but what I'm getting at too is a lot of times I just want to feel heard. I want to feel like I had my say. I've used the example before, probably on here too. I, you know, take my wife out to a really expensive dinner. We don't go out much. Like we had to get a babysitter. We had to do all these, take all these steps and make sure we had time and, you know, rush. And then, you know, my food's messed up. Like, hey, like that bothers me, man. That really upsets me. I put a lot of effort into this, but now how that goes is how the restaurant handles it, right? But I'm going to want to say like, hey, look, this is the problem. This is what it is, you know, and kind of start there. I have to get it off my chest. I have to do that psychologically. I have to vent that out. Otherwise, it just stays bottled up and it keeps going, right?
But this is why the Mobius loop of sentient AI and social media are so potentially dangerous. And that's not where we're going today, but I will tell you this. It's important for you sociologically to get out of your cave and walk across to your neighbor's house and get to meet the neighbors around you. Okay. It's important that they like you enough to tell you that your house is on fire, that somebody's burglarizing it. And it's important that you like them enough that if you see them laying down in the living room on the floor for hours at a time, that you might call 911. Social media is exactly opposite. Social media, you don't give a shit about anybody, but you care about the number of likes that you get. So you're willing to change your opinion and modify and go by that wavelength. So what does that mean? Well, an editorial is a perfect example in the paper. There's still print papers, folks. I read them every day. The idea about an editorial is I can give a zinger out there. Well, Mr. Speaker, yesterday when you said this, I will take umbrage with you. And guess what? Your name and your little title is at the bottom. Well, the anonymity that goes along with social media allows me to go further with that. And now I can have my say in all these genres, whether I know it or not. I'll give you an example. Governor Polis in Colorado and came up and they all voted on it yesterday and it became a law now that if you disagree with a book that's in the library and you want it removed or you want it edited or censured or anything else, you don't have to leave your name, your number, anything. All you got to do is contact them and completely with anonymity, they'll act on that. That's not the way society works.
Yeah.
The way society works is as a team, we come together and I say, I object. And then the rest of the team gets a vote. And together, we decide what's right. best for society. And you know what the first thing you do at a city council meeting, Brian? You stand yes. up and you give your name and your yeah. address, because yeah. you have to assign context to the relevance and relevance to the context. So this is what I'm talking about. You can have your say, but it's important to me that when you have your say, you go, this is who I am, and this is what
right.
and why I'm having my say.
That's why things kind of spiral the way they do on those social media apps, because you have that anonymity, you're not yes. interacting in person. I think, to me, that also is why they are far less valuable. I mean, I think a lot of times people just attribute like that part of that's a generational thing.
Yes.
And not having it, like, you'll look at it and be like, how could you say this? And I'm like, look, people right. say a lot of things. It's the Wayne's World. Look, a lot of guys' girlfriends are in there. You know what I mean? but the
exactly.
The idea is, everyone, you can have that say. It gets a little crazy on the social media stuff because of that anonymity. Yeah. Which we'll kind of talk about in a little bit here.
Yeah.
But it is, I think the reason why some of that happens is, I mean, it's psychologically and sociological imperative, right? In a sense that you're allowed to have your say. I have to get that off my chest. Yes,
Brian, you're also taught boundaries.
Yes.
That's where psychology meets sociology.
Yeah.
So you don't yell fire in a crowded theater. Okay. And think of all the case laws that goes along with all those different things. You don't come into the maternity ward and drop the F-bomb, bitches. You know, there's certain things that we yeah. don't do. And that ethical register, that social dampening spirit, you know, comes along. And you know what? Some people will object. And when they object, two or three or four of them get together, and now they strenuously object and they build signs. All of that's okay. We're okay with all of that. But when that meets the way.
Okay.
Right.
So this is a problem. And the reason why I want to bring up the social media stuff and just human interaction in general is because yeah. it sort of clouds our ability to attribute value to certain things people say or do. And it clouds our ability to sort of sense make and do what's likely going to happen next because of that sort of cultural, everyone can have their say in a sense on that social media. Well, that's a little bit different in person for those reasons you brought up. Like, I'm supposed to be, if you do it in public, I can go, hey man, like, I'm trying to have a nice dinner with my family. Can you shut up? Can you stop saying that at this family restaurant? Can
exactly.
you stop swearing? You know, but that's all good. But what I'm getting at with this is now there's the difference between people want their say and people want their say and their way. There's a difference between, you know, I'm complaining to the manager over my food, compared to I'm throwing fists at the manager over this. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
So
if you built an effigy of a political figure and it turned it into a pinata, you're having your say and your way. But that's a low level of intrusion. Now, if you burn that in effigy and you have 100 people chanting in the street and walking right. down and flipping cars, but that's the fear, isn't it? The fear is that it's going to lead to a shit sandwich you can't control. And I want to go back just a second, because you're yeah. onto a great point here. When you're talking about the value of somebody's statement, look, folks, everything that you say is important. It's important to get it out there. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying, some of your views are weighted differently. You're not a professor, then your view on this level of education is meaningless. And that hurts some people, Brian. That hurts some people. Look, I would not go to my neighbor, Mrs. Olson, and ask her about a heart procedure, you know, for cardiac care, because she has no idea. Now, she can give me an opinion. Well, you should sit quietly and have some soup, but it's fucking meaningless. So the idea is that certain things that you say are weighted differently. And it's important to understand that. And that's why when you tell somebody, hey, look, why don't you pipe down in the restaurant? I got my kids here, or I'll come across and do something. That's a different story altogether.
Right.
Having your say, saying, you know, hey, let's color in the lines. Everybody calm down for a minute, right? Calm down, not what you wanted to say, but you get my point. So you're on to something. And I think it's important that everybody understands that while you're valuable, okay, it's important to understand that on social media, you think your value is grossly overinflated and you need to rein it in sometime. I've never read a LinkedIn article where a person says, wow, that's a great opinion and I love it. What they do is they go, yeah, I knew a guy like that one, and they have to tell their story.
Well,
so
that,
social media is for you to tell your story.
That's another example of, like, you know, that I could see it where you know, people are going to make it about them. But, you know, yes. And kind of what we're getting at with this is the people that, you know, everyone gets to have their say. So I'm not concerned about any of that, right? None of that really is like, okay, you're talking. So it's the, what's the difference between someone who wants their say and then someone who wants their way, meaning someone who's not just going to, you know, sit yes. in their mom's basement complaining online, but yep. who's the person that's actually going to get up and go do something, because ultimately that's all that really matters, right? It's what your intent is and what your behavior Absolutely. Is. And I think that's why a lot of things get missed when people go, well, I didn't see it coming because, you know, I didn't know. I didn't think the guy was going to go out to his car and grab the gun and come in shooting. And it's like, I just thought they were just having their say. Or nope, that's different. That's a person.
You're spot you know, on.
Ted Kaczynski wanted his say yep. and his way, right? He wrote his manifestos to have his say, but then he actually built bombs and killed people, right? I mean, the idea is like, that's Tim McVeigh wanted his say and his way. You know what I mean? Who's the person that's actually going to do something? And I think that's where, because, you know, a lot of people bring in different terms, like the lone wolf thing, or how am I supposed to identify this, or who's, and it's, everyone's constantly on transmit. And so right. it's determining, does this person want to have their say, or do they want to have their way? Because I'm all about people having their say and letting them have it, because usually the situation subsides after that.
Don't run out of gas after a while. They absolutely will. Yes.
And so I think determining that is what we get a lot of questions about. And I had a great example sent to me from Nick. He's went through one of our courses and stuff. But you know, when you see the manager of, you know, a Major League Baseball team go out there and yell and scream at the umps, and they're saying this, nothing they say is going to change the call that was made on the field there. Like, that will not, like, what happened, right? Yes. And so no matter what, they're not going to change anyone's mind and go, you know what, coach, you're right. That was a strike. You know what I mean? It's past that. They already made the call. They know that. The coach knows that going out there. They've been in Major League Baseball for how long?
Right.
And they still go out there and do that.
They
and
have I think to do that.
It's such a great example of it, because why? Yeah. We're in the middle of it. We're in the game. It's high stakes. It's high pressure. There's people out here. They're in front of us. I need to go say something. It's like, well, but what are you getting out of it? And so that's like a low cal. I mean, that's something entertaining yes. to watch, but it's a great example that highlights what we mean by this.
You were very illustrative as well in your recent comments. One of the things that's really important to understand is that you have to put yourself in the shoes of a likely opponent or a likely board member or a likely neighbor and anticipate what could happen, what spirals could come out of what you're going to say or what you're going to do to intervene when they're saying something. What I mean by that is that you might go to somebody that walks in and goes, this place blows, I quit, and you can all shove it up your ass, and then walks out to the parking lot. And you're thinking in your mind, well, that's good because Frank had his say. Well, you've known Frank longer than anybody else at the plant, and you know that every time something like that happens, Frank goes and gets drunk and punches his wife or drives through a fence at the local arena and does hole shots on the lawn of the local church. So it shouldn't surprise you when he walks out to his trunk and grabs a shotgun and says it's end times. So why does that happen, Brian? Because we see the world through our lenses and our lenses only. And we go, well, I would never do that. Well, that doesn't mean that you can't have it on the table. And rightly so, you can't have all manners of behavior on the table. There's only a few things that are likely to happen. So if you weigh that say not the way, and now you start seeing it go towards the way, look, you're already on a fast track to MDCOA, most dangerous course of action. And that's why whenever anybody would ask me that, I would say, let them have their say for as long as they want to. But if they start dabbling in the way, be warned, it's coming. And what comes, because the say and the way combined are not going to be a fun thing. So what's a say and way that I can live with? Somebody putting a sign out on the front of their house going, my husband is sleeping with somebody else or something like that. That's a person venting, Brian, and it's mm-hmm. completely safe. Mm-hmm. Okay. That person and then goes and buys a gun and starts driving around local motels, that's going to be a mess. And whether it's warranted or not, Brian, I'm just saying it's a likelihood, and that likelihood now is weighted differently. It goes to the top of the stack. So for our critical thinkers out there, life is constantly on transmit, not just people, life. And so that vehicle, that event, that person that's in front of you, this is one mechanism that can immediately tell you that there's danger or opportunity right in front of you. And it's easy. if you practice it, it's simple and it'll get you out of a lot of scrums. Totally.
You know, and that's why it's one of those thinking points that you can go, okay, you know, does this person want their say or do they want their way? Or are they, right, are they demonstrating some other intent? Are they continuing to escalate when everyone else is trying to de-escalate and letting them vent? Are they continuing, exactly, to gain more territory in the situation or bring people on board with them? Are they, you know, I mean, it's like, are you giving them all of these chances to de-escalate and walk away, save face, and they're not taking
them. And they're consciously, deliberately not taking them. Because sometimes I miss the point and I'm way off in left field because of my hearing or because of my politics or my family. And you got to rein me in with the shepherd's crook and go, yeah, okay, we're done. You know, we've beaten that horse enough. It's dead. Okay. And, you know, I value that. But my intent was never to have my way. It was just to continue to have my say. So is it okay to rein that in sometime? Yeah. Especially when the argument is no longer about what we started at. The third, right, time somebody says, and another thing,
so,
you know what I'm trying to say?
That's,
it's time to bring out that shepherd's crook and dust.
So these are other indicators, and that's a great example that you brought up. And the idea is what has this situation now grown into?
Exactly.
Because it started back here with
entropy.
This. But yep, you're clearly bringing in all of these other things that,
yep,
we weren't talking about that, or that wasn't the issue. And then it's, oh, and another thing. And you know what? And then the last time I was here, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. So
exactly,
now I'm now realizing the sort of the gravity of the situation where it's like, okay, this person clearly has all of these other things on their mind,
yes,
that have nothing to do with the situation we're right in, which means their glass is full. And when someone's glass is full, right, when you bump into them, they're going to spill whatever that is all over you. And that,
right,
could be something, you know, just.
And this, what an incredible segue into acting up, acting out.
Okay.
Because when you get off the point and stay off the point, and now you stand and you're grandstanding and you're saying, and another thing. First of all, that's every domestic I've ever been on that's,
right,
going to result in somebody getting yanked out of the house in handcuffs, which is never a good situation, because stop and think what's about to come out of your mouth. We're back to put yourself in the shoes of the other person. Are the words that I'm going to say going to hurt them? Is this going to do damage that I can't undo? You know, I'm ringing a bell that I can't unring. So that's kind of the acting up. The next phase is acting out. So if then I manifest that by throwing something against the wall and tipping over a table or doing that, here we are again. Here we are in that, you know, my way, and my way here is I'm acting out. That's unacceptable. That's sociological, physiologically, psychologically unacceptable. Why do I add physiologically to that one? That wasn't an accident, because the more times you repeat that behavior, the more ingrained that becomes. So you're not going to be happy until you do that. You're not going to be happy until you throw something before you leave the room. And that's not a dramatic flourish. We don't come with a soundtrack. That's you creating that gosh damn soundtrack, and it's not going to end well anytime. Dropping the mic is different, Brian. That's somebody that wanted their say and their way. They drop the mic, the conversation's over. Okay? It's not over. Okay? Great job. You just delayed it for another time. But again, in a form of de-escalation, I'll accept that over you tipping over a table, which is never acceptable. I hope that makes sense.
No, and you know, the context for some of these things that matter, the location for some of the things matter.
Yep.
You know, you talked about, like, you brought up like the domestic violence situation. Obviously,
yes,
it's highly emotionally, highly charged, and you're in someone's home. People act differently in their home than they do in their car, than they do when they're staying at a hotel somewhere.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Those things. And because of that, you know, if I'm coming in observing this, I'm, like you said, I'm looking at it through my lenses and, oh, I would never do this. And, you know, I fail to even recognize the differences in myself. I mean, everyone acts differently,
yep,
at a hotel than they do in their house or on vacation when they do normally, because you've either How would I say this?
Oh, go ahead.
You're going to hold yourself to a certain standard in your own home, and you'll lower that standard in other places sometimes because maybe, well, it's someone else's mess to clean up, and I don't have to do that, and that's not mine. And you'll have a little bit, but some people have a lot more of that where they're,
yeah,
the total F it, man. That's someone else's mess. I don't care. You know, like I actually like I pick up my hotel room and make sure it's organized because that's how I like it. And like, even if it's not getting cleaned, I'll make my own bed in a hotel room because I need that, right? It doesn't matter what it is, but that's me and that's who I am. That's what I do every day. So it becomes part of me. So it's kind of like, you know, some people like, oh, whatever, I'll toss it, I'll leave it on the ground, I'll throw everything out the window. But you can see that change. It's like, is this person like this all the time? Or are they doing it right here in this moment?
Here's a great thing, and you're right on such an important distinction. Why do they ask for the first month's rent, the last month's rent, and a cleaning
security
or
deposit.
A security deposit? Because they know if it's not yours, you're not going to care as much. And there is a segment of us as humans that are going to take that right to the limit, and they're going to walk off, and they're going to drop the mic, and there's going to be holes in the wall, and the plumbing is plugged, and all these other things. And you know what? You're a landlord. You're not a punching bag. Well, the same is true as a hotel, because hotels are transient. In your mind, you have to understand that responsibility and accountability are transient. When I'm out in traffic in my own car and you don't know who I am, I will do things that I would never consider doing if I was at my home and accountable. I'm in my office and my name tag's on the door, on my parking spot, and on my desk. So you have to understand, if you run one of those places or you're a night manager at a hotel, you're not dealing with the whole human. You're dealing with that human and their psychology on transient mode, which means they're away from home. So I would tell you that your local bar and a bar while you're traveling are different. I would tell you that a restaurant that you frequent with your family and going in a fast food joint while you're on the road are two different things. Think about what you do to the shitter when you're on the road. Why? Because you have no responsibility or accountability. And instead of dropping a mic, you're dropping the road flare, right? You're trying to get out of there because you know that you're likely never to see those people again. They have no idea who you are. That level of sociological anonymity is also what builds into crowd violence, because I feel that I'm in the crowd at a carnival or a concert and nobody knows me. So I can punch a nun or you know, tip over a car, or do those things. I don't know. It's Freudian, I guess. But I want you to understand that all goes back to my original argument for Say Not Way about boundaries. We learn certain boundaries. And so when we're out there, hey, even the Amish have a year to sow the wild oats, right?
Yeah, right.
And oats,
right.
Oats they sow. So when you go to those places, and I would argue that a motel is different than a hotel. And you're saying, yeah, well, I go there because I can only afford that. No, that's not really true. Your brain makes a whole bunch of choices for you. And when you look at that, you think of all these wonderful possibilities that could happen in that hotel. And guess what? You're out on the road. You're out doing different things. Somebody says, John on that business trip, man, I saw a whole different side of him. Of course you did, because it's not John anymore. It's John on the road. So if you can't equate that, and we're right back to taking the position of another person, being the fly on the wall, putting your shoes in their shoes. Brian, these are all what sets us apart from other trainers. The anticipation and the likelihood and the demonstrations of intent create this little mental checkbox that I can use in any situation. So now if I got Say Not Way and I got acting up and not acting out, those are two quick questions. Let's say you're a copper and you're pulling up on a scene and you don't know what's happening. It's involved right in front of you. You ask those two questions about everybody that's in the scene very quickly.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, you've got some box drawn, right? And now you go, okay, well, this stuff's in the box. This is out of the box. This guy's uninvolved. These are just witnesses. It's going to help you create a fidelity-filled baseline much more quickly than just coming into a situation and throwing darts. You know, I don't care what Maslow said about the domestic I'm about to come on to, because I'm not going to be able to, you know, use that to de-escalate. I can't.
No, yeah, no. Any chance you can bash Maslow?
Oh my God, he's not the only one. Schrodinger called yesterday and goes, "Have you seen my cat? He's one of my neighbors in the neighborhood."
So
he didn't ask about John Boyd. Just so you know. Oh my God, let John Boyd lie, will you?
So
the one I sent you the other day was a Lulu.
Yeah. So you brought up a great point about the crowd dynamics, and that's the
you know,
the sociological implications of this huge. It goes back to even the baseball example I used, right?
Yep.
Well, I'm expected to do certain things in these certain situations. I'm expected to have a reaction, and it's okay here.
Yes.
You know, does that same manager do that, you know, when he has an argument with his wife? Or probably not.
You know, bumping chest, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I would say that's unlikely. You can't right. make that determination based on how they act there. And it's so heavily dependent on what that is. And so using those sort of as questions is, does this person want their say?
You're
do they
exactly
want their
right.
Are they acting up or are they acting out? I mean,
a manager of a restaurant, a manager of a hotel, a cop on a traffic stop. Those are valid questions, Brian, that they should always be thinking about before they walk up.
And what it does is really help sort of what it is, you know, you're targeting, but you're, yes. you're creating, you're doing a little bit of sense making to figure out what's the best intervention strategy if one needs to be, or if I need to let this go and not intervene and let them, you know, run out of gas because that's likely what they're going to do. And it's hard to bring up specific examples in this because what everyone gets into is then it's like, well, then they, you know, are they look like they're about to fight or are they doing something physiologically? It's like, okay, that's great, but just take a step back for a second and look
you're
at the
way
scene
down
as a
the
whole.
Continuum. You're way down here.
Yeah,
get closer to home. I agree. Look, a simple thing. Next time you're at the airport to go to the urinal, drop your pants all the way to your ankles when you urinate. That's going to create an atmospheric shift that you could film and demonstrate in class. Now, folks, this is Greg telling you to go out and do this limited objective experiment. Expect fully that people will want to punch you and hit you, or people will run away from you, or security is going to tackle you when you're coming out of that shitter. But the idea is, Brian, that's a boundary. It's a social boundary that you cross, and you have to be mindful that you crossed it. You mentioned baseball. There's a certain amount of stadiums, I think I know too, where if the ball is a home run and it's hit up into the stands, you don't keep the ball. You throw it back down onto the field. And guess what?
It's
if you didn't know
team.
That,
yeah,
the context and the relevance on that might make you a pariah in the stands, and people will walk away, or somebody will throw a punch at you, or they'll boo you and put you on the, you know, the positron or whatever the big thing. That's not what it's called.
That's positron. I don't think that's what
particle.
It is.
Jumbotron. Yeah, I know. Jumbotron.
Put you on the linear accelerator.
Jumbotron in high school. It still hurts me. But listen to me. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those things that you do without thinking are the things that are most perilous. So that person that's not in touch with their emotional self that starts arguing, and what's that mean? And then they're going to come up to you, Brian, that's a person that doesn't understand there's a differentiation between say and way, because they've been getting their way because they're louder and more gruff and they've been acting out more than somebody else. Well, that's not the measure of society. You do not belong in our civilized society. So guess what? Outlier. Either fix thyself before you knock at the door, or we're going to come after you and do something. We're going to censure you. We're going to throw you in jail, or we're going to fine you, or whatever else. So that's a balance, and that's what law was created for, because sometimes we're skating on thin ice and we don't know it. So law and physics are two good ways to go back and look at this, right?
Yeah, I think the ball in that situation is the neutrino then, if those are the positrons. Then.
Exactly. the jumbotron as an accelerator.
But if
I know I'm dumb. You don't have to remind me. I'm hurt now. I was up last night with a bear 2 nights in a row, and you're making fun of my word choices. I make up words that I don't know.
You definitely use them in your own
freely,
manner sometimes.
Freely.
But you bring up the point of, you know, even with the law or sociological considerations is the that leads to the boundaries. And so meaning if the person in the restaurant is bitching and complaining about their table and then they get a new, better table, well, they got their way. And so they learned that, you know, you taught
of
them, like, I can act like
and
an
again,
ass.
That's an acceptable one, right? Because it's not hurting anybody, but you have to understand that's not right. So
that's what I'm getting at is
exactly.
That, you know,
I think you're right
on. That person learned, you know, you taught them in that moment, well, if I complain and I'm an ass to people and you know, maybe I said some, you know, inappropriate comments, but I got my way. Well, I'm now, right. That's now a method for me. That is now something I'm going to use again in the future.
And you're right back to social media and where they ask you to leave your, what was that site? Remember that used to say, leave your comment. Did you like it? Did you hate it? Was it food good? Was it bad? And Yelp. And Yelp, people were going on and just crippling a startup with a Yelp review because they thought it was funny. You know, they did it in Gunnison. There's a longtime Mexican restaurant in Gunnison, and the college kids came in 1 year, and they rated Taco Bell 5-star, and the great family restaurant that's been in here forever, 3-star. Okay, well, think about that. That changes the dynamic. Brian, you would never think in a million years of sitting at a restaurant being unhappy with food and walking around and polling the other people eating. Hey, how's your food? Mine wasn't that good. And then going to another place. You see what I'm trying to say? There's a structure. And even though you don't see the structure, that relevance and context cage is around you all the time. And so if you understand that it's there, look, I'm not saying bite your tongue when something's wrong. I'm not saying to speak up when something's wrong. I'm saying that you have to understand that when the rock hits the pond, you can't bring it back and the ripples are going to go out. So you don't do that on social media. You do that in public society where people are rating you on Yelp with their fist and their feet some days.
No, and that's important to understand, you know, the intervention strategy or the, you know, the even just how you handle those situations, which is kind of why we're talking about this and bringing this up. And it's like, okay, you have to realize if I use that sort of framework of are they acting up, acting out, what am I dealing with here?
Yep.
Then because obviously you want the lowest calorie intervention, you don't want things to go well. You know, you brought up the Yelp review where someone bashes it. And then I've seen where like the owner of that place will come on and respond like, hey, I'm so sorry about your experience. Love to make it up to you. Come on in. I'll give you this. And then they're like, no, I'm never coming. It's like, okay. You don't want a good resolution.
Exactly.
You wanted
that was never your intent. Right. Because almost everybody would have chosen another strategy.
And that's why we boil down to things like demonstrations of intent and people acting out is, you know, that's a demonstration of intent. You don't want this to be resolved. You want to get this off your chest. You don't want to actually fix the problem here. You have something else going on. And so that changes the math there, right? It changes the calculus a little bit about what I can and can't do in terms of an intervention strategy and determining what the likelihood of this person is, right? We never know. No one ever realizes, well, I didn't think they were going to go out in their car, you know, get the shotgun out and come in shooting. It's like, well, yeah, but they were screaming it the entire time.
It's just you didn't tune into the frequency. You never made the attempt to scan, you know, like there's scanners for radar, for coppers. There's scanners that pick up ham radio frequencies. There's scanners that are SETI is facing out into our universe to see if somebody's contacting. Well, every soldier a sensor, every Marine a collector, that meant something to me. That meant that you have to go in and be constantly flipping the dial till you understand what frequency that person's transmitting on. And Brian, that's why earlier I said, hey, don't drop the calm down. That's never calmed down anything. But then nobody goes further. They all laugh at that platitude. Well, you know what? Try this intervention next time to de-escalate any of those situations. Hey, just give me a minute to understand what's happening here. Now the person starts to explain more. You know what you just did? You just drew the problem out and they'll get tired of ranting and another thing. And now we'll know their true intent and we can bounce them out of the joint. But we've given them those opportunities you keep talking about.
And anyone listens knows I do the go on.
I'd like to
hear more. And then that's such a great way to determine their intent because if they're still amping up and that temperature's increasing and you're giving them the chance to decrease it, then that means they don't want to. So now I know what I'm dealing with, right?
Right. And now they're filming it and a remote person comes in and you know that it's some attempt to get you cracking that egg on camera, right? So you can use it to discredit somebody or something. That new thing has been around forever. Graffiti was the social media of its age. Yeah. Cave paintings were the social media of its age.
Yeah.
So you know, the allegory of the cave keeps popping up here. And one of the offshoots of the allegory of the cave is you see what you want to see. So if you're only seeing what you want to see, you'll be that person that keeps crossing these sociological boundaries and you'll be pissing people off. You ever look at a guy And I do this all the time. And you go, ah, he's been in a county jail. Or you're just across and go, oh, somebody's punched this guy before. And the reason is, but how they're carrying themselves in society is just sending messages to me constantly about, hey, that Band-Aid on your nose is there for a good gosh damn reason, you know?
Yeah, and that's the idea. It's they're transmitting this, and you know you're never gonna fix that person, but you can fix the situation, right? You can make a better situation out of it, and this isn't even a like judgment on those people. I don't care. I really don't. You know what I mean?
At the end
of
the day,
I'm not here to judge you. That's between you and what you pray to or don't pray to. But it's what's going to happen right now in the moment that I'm concerned about. And am I going to be involved in something I don't want to be involved in?
Exactly. And even my membership in the furries comes with accountability. There's a rule, you know, expected level of conduct. And I'm telling you that.
How are those tails attached, Greg? Well, it's not attached to the costume.
Some of them are with gravity. I'll leave it at that. The idea is that you must understand that some places come with different boundaries. And when you go into them, a hospital is different than a church. A church is different than a hotel. And if we want to exemplify that again, coppers walking up on a traffic stop. The person that's in the car is not always the James Bond villain. Sometimes it's just a human, and they've had too much to drink, or they've had too many tickets or something else. And now they're thinking that anonymity again, Brian, I'm going to make a social media post by mashing down on the accelerator and pulling away. And we still got cops dying from jumping in the car, jumping in front of the car, doing all that other stuff. Here, when we talk about things not being equally weighted, there's one right there. Is that person wanting their say or their way in the car? Their say is them speeding off. Their way is hurting or injuring or starting to run those traffic lights or, you know, driving too fast for conditions. Not every person that you encounter is that animal, vegetable, or super criminal. Some people are just going through life. The quicker you get to the resolution of these two questions, the better your relationship with your kids is going to be. Your relationship with your significant other, your relationship at church or school or in society. And people are going, it can't be that easy. It is that easy. Try it today.
No.
Go out and try that today. You mentioned something that I bring up in every group that I'm in. Brian always says, make it about the problem, not about the person. That's a form of long-term continuous de-escalation that anybody on the call right now, anybody watching us or watching us on YouTube or listening to us on their driving to work, you can change your life today by adopting that. So these work.
No, and making it about two things. The kid example is always good because, you know, it's a good way to determine, you know, what are they, do they want their say? Do they want their way? Is this something that they're just getting off their chest, or is this something that we have to actually talk about and get involved with?
Is there something between the lines? Is there something they're trying to tell us that we're not picking up on? Right.
And then, you know, making it about the problem, not about the person is a great way, because then again, what happens when someone you know who's an asshole and they're being an asshole all the time? Like, the problem with that is they're going to eventually have like a legitimate complaint that is a problem that is necessary.
Exactly.
And so if you're just looking at this, like, oh great, what's this asshole talking about again? It's like, well, no, this one's serious. Yep. This one you have to. So if I focus on the problem, not on that person, like, what is the actual issue here? Then it kind of, again, it helps reduce some of the noise. It kind of helps get rid of whatever bias you have towards that person, because which may be a completely legitimate and real and accurate bias. But in this case, you know, this is a serious issue. And, you know, we boil those down to simple takeaways like that, because that's a way to look at it. Now,
they're sticky and they're memorable too, Brian.
And there's a lot
something
there.
That, you know, okay, I got that now. Well, no, you don't. That's why you open a file folder and you header the file folder. And then you keep adding those experiences in. And guess what? Your brain loves that. Your brain will put them all over different corticals, not just one memory. You don't just have a long-term sense memory. You have a whole bunch of short-term working memories that can bounce up to give you an idea of what you should expect next. And guess what? If that person is consistently and constantly choosing off the menu, they're demonstrating their intent. So it all comes back around to a feedback loop. And the information that you're sampling now is going to be different in a minute. And it's going to be different in 3 minutes, in 5 minutes. And I love that. What we're trying to do is simplify that process for anybody. You don't have to be a PhD to do this.
No. And what you can do, what I always tell folks to do when, you know, when we don't have a lot of time, or they don't have, they're not going through some training or something like that. It's like, look, take that, you know, what we just talked about here, and look back at other interactions that you've had. You've had it where someone was just normal, just argumentative, whatever, nothing came from it. But then you've seen where maybe that spiraled out of control and was different. Okay, well, we'll take a look going back now. What were the differences there to go, oh, wow, now I see that person was screaming at me the whole time that they were going to do it. Whereas this time where nothing happened, it's obvious to tell them in hindsight to go, oh, yeah, I could tell that nothing was going to happen there. This one
exactly.
So use those. Use your own experiences to then as a comparative baseline going forward. And then you sort of already have some of the experience in there of what demonstrations of intent look like. The difference between someone who wants their say and their way. Because you've seen it before, right? And so now you can determine going forward, go, okay, this is likely someone here. I need to intervene sooner, or this one's spiraling out of control. I may need to get some help, or whatever the situation or the context is. It doesn't matter. It's the sort of the anticipation and then the recognition of what could occur is that's where the power lies, because then you don't have to deal with everything after the fact.
So let's give a street example, and that's profound again, Brian. You did it. There's a website called IMDb. Every single time I watch a movie, I go to IMDb, and the first thing I do is I bring up the actors, you know, that played in the film. Then I go to the site and I read the behind the scenes and all the things that people have added. Now, yes, in a manner, it can be like the Google machine where people add their ridiculous crap. But most of the time, it's a filmmaker or a film student or somebody saying, hey, this nuanced thing, look at the aspect ratio. I love that minutia. But when I look at the actors, when I look at the people that filled out that film for me, you'll start in the first four or sometimes five people will be somebody you recognize. Okay, that was the protagonist. These two were the antagonists. This was the aunt that they lived with. And then all the other people you'll look at and go, holy crap, I didn't know these 35 other people were in the film. Why? Because they were just the background that's going on. That's what we do wrong. What we do wrong is we look for the character that's right in front of us and compare them to us rather than looking at the cast and saying they're not equally weighted. This person now has just popped up and they're more significant because they're closer to me. And that person because they're revving their engine. And this person because they smell of alcohol when they went by me. All of those things are important. And that's where those gosh damn movies about John Wick and the guy from the CIA and all those other things come from. Wouldn't it be great if you can do that? Well, you and I are saying you can do that in almost every situation, and you don't have to be some tire flipping, rope climbing superstar. What you do is you understand that everybody matters and that life is made up of a cast of millions and billions of people, and they're not all weighted equally. Does that mean that they're not as important? No. But my span of control, those people around me are, and you pop hot. You become more important to me when you demonstrate intent. If you think of life like that, Brian, what we do is very, very simple, okay? But it's so complex that it takes people coming back to the class and buying the book and doing all these other things, and they still want to learn more. Why? Because life is amazing. It's amazing that everybody in your scene matters. But if you only look at your front door and your boots and your car, guess what? Life is just routine, man.
And just like that IMDb website, you know, that actor, that character, they played a different role, a different character in a different movie.
And sometimes in hundreds of movies, Brian.
So you kind of assume, and I like those analogies because we use them a lot because for films, because it's where people get to, you know, they're so popular because they tell a story and storytelling is obviously everyone loves. But the idea is, you know, we each kind of assume a role in these different situations, but that role isn't, that's not your, you know, you're not typecast necessarily unless you're so distinct in who you are that like, that's it, right? You know, there's some of those characters that's it. That's the only role they play.
They'll never ever be out of that role. Exactly.
But that's not typical, right? So we all play a different role based on what we are in that scene, in that scenario, in
and
that situation.
Who we see ourselves as changes. We change during that film because we go, oh, elements of me are in this female. Elements of my social life are in this protagonist. And you know what? That evil guy, I could see that. Brian, you know my rant. We should write a book about the Zom films because they're waning now. That's not as important.
Yeah, so, well, they're kind of
after the
sixth
season.
They're waning in popularity now. They got real popular
because,
a few years ago, though, with The Walking Dead and everything. So
yeah, but after the sixth season, it was shit. And it's still shit. And all the spinoffs are shit. And I'll tell you why. you have a fantasy, and I'm talking to you in the audience listening right now, that if everything went to pandalarium and pandemonium and apocalyptic proportions, that you could be and do whatever you want. You could rewrite your history. You could take a wearing blender and spin it around your head by the cord and knock people out, whether they're zombies or real people. You could rape and pillage. You could live in a hut. You could create your super outfit and nobody give a shit because they're fighting in the apocalypse against zombies. That anonymity is what social media caused. And those filmmakers stepped away from that, Brian. They stepped away from what we really felt inside on, ooh, I'm losing my breath on what I could be here. I could break into my neighbor's home and live in their attic. You know, those type of things that we have boundaries about, crossing those boundaries is an amazing feeling. It's cathartic for all of us. And guess what? Once those movies ended up, then we don't watch them anymore. So the problem with the person at the restaurant that's yelling those obscenities and acting like an idiot, they're living in that old film. They don't understand that sociologically they're crossing a boundary. And that's why we get back to say not way, that acting up, acting out. It's those are boundaries that we can feel when we're in an environment. And when we cross them, there better be a gosh damn good reason for crossing them. Or what do we tell people? How long have you stay in your lane? And everybody uses stay in your lane, but they really don't get it. They really don't get that when you merge, you know, into other lanes, you're the rock in the pond. So don't get out there, because that's a bold move, Brian. Bold move to be that rock in the pond today, you know? So I appreciate you letting me go on Zoms, but it's such an important tactic when you're teaching your kids or your family or somebody else, why do people act the manner that they do? Well, some people push those boundaries all the time. And those are the people that are going to act up and act out. So the person's going to have their say and their way. It's another way of looking at it, I guess.
No, and that's why I wanted to kind of deep dive it and to give these different examples. And we gave a bunch from, you know, everything from Major League Baseball to dealing with kids to zombie apocalypse movies, which is always great.
To staying at a hotel, yeah.
But
oh
because
my God, I used to love them.
That's always the thing. Okay, everyone does the, when this scenario, when everything goes to shit, it's like, okay.
And they always get it wrong, Brian. Watch a movie like Last Man on Earth. Vincent Price, go back and get one of those originals. The first six seasons of The Walking Dead. I have to deal with this dilemma, right back to you, dealing with the problem, not the person. And now what it become? It all became Peyton Place, where the tribes are now fighting each other. Dude, if you were the last couple of people on Earth, you'd be working together.
Well,
you can't not work together.
If you the historical examples are when things go really bad, people band together and they start over and they move
better.
Forward and they get better
than
and
before.
They learn the hard way, and then they said, okay, well that things we gotta wind the tape back a little bit. Things go
exactly.
crazy, and then they band together, and so that's the whole thing. Is that
I love that.
I mean,
perfect
that's
example.
How
Lord of the Flies.
Are. Yeah.
Lord of the Flies is an actual event that occurred.
Yeah,
but the event that occurred is those kids pulled together and they survived. So the author goes, well, holy shit, there's no book there.
There's no good game.
Right? I mean, think about that. So when we talk about Hollywood,
made their own splints for people that hurt themselves. Those kids
had their own med cap. They had people that were responsible for hunting for food.
They assigned roles and they said,
exactly.
let's do this.
And
we're
they did
survive.
Great.
They did really well.
They really did.
But that's not as good as the book of Lord of the Flies, though. I can't.
Piggy with the conch.
Yeah,
exactly. So, Brian, that's what we're saying about life. Life, once you start unraveling the mysteries, there's certain constants. And those constants can help you understand. We're not going to bring up the new Stanford study on free will. But what we are going to do is say, life, comma, you're doing it wrong. Go back. I would say to everybody listening, this is a great podcast. I'm having fun. Go take just those two things we talked about today and maybe another third point where we talked about an example and go out and try them today and see this week if your life becomes easier and more you understand it more or better. And I think you will.
I don't. I don't think people are doing it wrong. Just they're talking about or analyzing it incorrectly. What they're doing sometimes. I mean, I see that with
misapplying. I agree.
And they're going, well, this is going to happen and things are going to go to shit. And they're coming up with these crazy scenarios.
Right.
But then sometimes they're like, hey, that's why you want to make sure like, hey, you prepare for things and you have this and you have a community of people and you got to get everyone else involved. It's like, that's the right thing, but all
and
the stuff
been
that you're
there
saying
forever.
About it is
oh my God.
Like,
I, you know what I'm going to say?
Know.
It's coming up on Halloween. You know what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
I'm dressing as Nostradamus for Halloween again this year. And the reason is Nostradamus' first name was Mike. Once you understand that, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right?
Yeah.
Life is much simpler than we're making it. Yes, it's much more complex, Brian, but it's much simpler in so many ways that we can control today.
Yeah, and our ability to adapt to it is far better than what people give it credit
Absolutely.
For. I mean, it's going to adapt in what it sees as a survival, but it's still going to adapt very quickly. I don't know.
Not all societies are going to turn to Mad Max, the first one, or the Thunderdome. And those make great movies, and we love to see them, Brian.
We do.
That's not how life rebuilds itself.
It's played out, though.
That's not. And it never has been.
And anyone that attempted that, they died off. I mean, it didn't last. So that's why you
have to uncover the hieroglyph or the petroglyph to talk about that, because they're unremarkable.
Yeah.
And that's why the remarkable things stick around. Test of time. Let's go back to the Greeks. High five. Okay.
Well, I think that's a...
I didn't get a high five back, but it's notional.
Virtual high five.
Virtual
Wait, does
five.
It have the little things up there where that it had some...
We're
new
like
thing
in prison now if we do that. I have to do this hand, though.
Billy. Billy.
So, exactly. I just want the conjugal visit.
You ever been to a Turkish prison?
That's a place to land.
Yeah, I think that's a lot.
Hey, another teaser about the book, or we shut up? What's going on?
Yeah, it's coming out. Those folks who are connected have already got their updates about it. You know, I'll be sending out some more soon. So if you're signed up,
I think a couple of people already have them too.
Yeah, they did. Well, they went out, that's for sure. So they're getting in the hands of people. So we're going to get some feedback and then do a kind of deep dive on some of the stuff in there. We can always.
And I want cool stuff, Brian. I want cool stuff too. I want somebody that buys their book to show us where they work holding the book, or, you know, they're on Kilimanjaro holding the book, or they're, you know, eating human remains after a plane crash, using the book as a plate. I want some cool stuff like that too, that we can show on social media, you know? It could happen.
I don't know what you're doing with our book. If you're on Kilimanjaro and, you know, if you're eating human remains,
Brian,
please.
Why do you always have to take the negative? Please
use the pages for fire. Don't read it.
So you don't die. You know, or to wipe. But listen, hold up that book and send us that photo.
Hey, it saved my life. I was able to use the pages for fire and warm.
I'm going to use mine tonight to fight the bear.
All right. I think that's a good place to end on with it. You know, that there's some good take. There's gotta be a lesson in there somewhere, right?
Even a monkey with a typewriter, Brian.
But please, if you have any questions about this, definitely reach out to us, leftofgreg@gmail.com. That's great. And then we do more on the Patreon site and have Q&A stuff on there and different videos, and they're getting all kinds of previews for stuff that we have coming up. So that's good. And then we do appreciate everyone listening. And thanks. If you do enjoy it, please share the episode with a friend or send it to someone. And we love the feedback and questions, so we can talk about
Keep it
on
coming.
Here. So please reach out to us. Anything else to add, Greg, here before we wrap?
Pray for Shelly and I and our bear.
Yeah.
You know, the new
bear. Don't get eaten.
So you know what Java
bear.
Does? Java goes upstairs. Java's the smartest. Our dog is the smartest. Instead of going out and confronting the bear, she goes upstairs and lays down.
Yeah, that's probably the smart thing to do.
I tried it and Shelly kept poking me. So apparently I'm in charge of this bear. So.
On that note, thanks everyone for tuning in, and don't forget that training
changes behavior.
Bears do change behavior.
They really do.
But training also changes behavior. Thanks everyone.
That's all for today, folks. But if you'd like even more content, you can head over to our Patreon page. The link can be found in the episode details. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media, and please tell your friends about the show. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you for your support.